Good morning. Welcome to Magnificat Radio and MagnificatMedia.com. We haven't had this song for a while.
No, we haven't.
La, da, da, da. It's your morning tradition. Where we are.
Living our faith.
Mike and Lisa Austin here. And welcome aboard. This is kind of a happy little sound right here. It's Tuesday, February the 23rd. And, well, we're going to get a little historical on you today. Our good friend Robert F. Garrison's going to join us, and we're going to chat. I don't know. If you think Charles the First, right away you go, okay, Charles the what? Who? Charles the who?
Right.
Charles the First of England. This is a story all about the Reformation, the Anglican Church, the rift between the Catholics and the Protestants and the Puritans. And this, if you take the story of Charles the First, and, well, Mr. Garrison will explain it all to you, but as you listen to his talk and our what our interview is going to be, you can draw some parallels to where we are today. And we always say, how can you know where you're going if you don't know where you've been?
That's right.
And
you have to know your history.
We are a Puritan country. Let's be honest. I mean, that's they landed here. We came very close to being a Catholic country.
Yes, we did.
Thank you, Spain. Thank you, France. But anyway, Mr. Garrison will get into it all. We're going to have a nice historical talk today, as only he can present it. Robert F. Garrison, our good friend and historian.
Can you imagine if we were a Catholic country?
I love to imagine it quite
Me
often.
Me too.
I love to imagine it. What if?
I wonder if it would be like Europe, you know?
Only a little better, because we have really, really cool resources here. We'd have really nice French accents like Canada. So, you know, you got that. Anyway, we're going to go to the political, the religious, the moral realm and aspects of the whole thing. This is a part of a much bigger talk that Mr. Garrison can give, but we're gonna condense a little bit today and talk about that. I've had, in the last couple of days, a number of people bring up to me the whole thing that the Pope said with the Zika virus and contraception and all of that.
Right.
And we haven't jumped right on this right away. We didn't have John Venere on right away, although we might. We haven't touched base on it really at all. We haven't even mentioned it. And that's purposeful. We did that on purpose. We know that it happened. It's, you know, Stephen Cox may have mentioned it. I don't know.
Yes.
But we didn't touch on it here on our morning show. And here's where I'm headed with this. We here at Magnificat Radio do things. We're well aware of the problems in the church, as most folks are.
Yes, we are.
It's not a secret.
No.
And we always say living our traditional Catholic faith. We always say living our faith, but we throw in traditional Catholic faith. We are your morning tradition, right?
Right.
You could, when things like this happen, and as we've said with John Venere on this very show before, literally with Pope Francis, you could have a new controversy every week.
You could.
Just about.
And we don't want to keep complaining. You know, our mission is for the greater glory and honor of God. It's in our mission statement for people to get to know Him, love Him, and serve Him. And it's not about, you know, bringing attention to all the things that are happening in the world just to complain about it.
We know that there are wrongs. We know that there are things said. And we leave that, for the most part, to the other guys.
Because they do it really well.
Right. They do a really good job of covering that.
So,
Michael Matt and all of those guys.
Yeah.
And we've Michael Matt just happens to be very, very busy at the time. And right now, it's hard for him to find time to be on. But he has said that he would be happy to come on.
Mm-hmm.
We're just trying to find a time to do it. John Venere, God love him, good friend of ours. We've broken bread together. We've cajoled and all of that together. He's a great guy, and he comes on our show. We leave the stuff like that to him for the most part. So I just wanted to say that to get the air cleared that we're not ignorant to what the Pope said about the Zika virus and contraception and stuff, and shocking as it is, does it help you live your faith? Because that's our statement, living our Catholic faith, traditional Catholic faith.
Right. Bringing you content that helps you to do that better. Like the Stations of the Cross.
Right.
Like learning about your Roman liturgy, like church and state. And so so many other ideas that we have in the back of our heads that are being developed right now.
Like a historical talk about Charles the First in the 1500s, 1600s, right?
That's right.
Does that help you live your traditional Catholic? Well, maybe not, but it is good to know your history, right?
Right. Well-rounded.
Homeschooling tips.
Yes.
And things like that. So, like Lisa said, we have a lot of things in the works we're working on for you. Prayers, music, things like that. So I just wanted to just a quick kind of, so many people, at least three people in the last 2 days, I think, have mentioned it to me. Well, you know, the Pope and the you know, contraception thing, you know, you're going to have to cover that. Just the fact that you're bringing it up to me says you already know about it.
All right. So do you want to hear it here again?
What do I need to say about it? So anyway,
So tell your friends what we have to offer here. Tell them to come and like our page, Magnificat Media on Facebook. Like us on, follow us on LinkedIn. Follow us on Twitter. I'm at Pinterest, too.
Oh, yeah.
Go like some of those things.
Go pin something on Lisa. How do we need to do? What do you do?
Go pin me. I don't know.
What, are they thumbtack you or something? What do they do, Lisa?
I'm still learning that one.
Okay. Is it painful? I mean, is there an
No.
Okay.
It actually is a lot of fun once you can get into it. I just got to find the time.
Yeah. Well, it can be addictive. You got to be careful with that.
Yeah, it can be.
Be careful with that one. Well, and if you go to our YouTube page, you're going to find your church and state.
Yeah, and what do you do there? Follow them or like the YouTube page? What do you do for YouTube?
YouTube, you can actually subscribe to our YouTube page.
That's the word. And subscribe.
Yeah, and when I put the learning around our Roman liturgies up there or the church and state, which the new one will be up probably later today, if not by now. I got to look. Then you get a little thing in your it just shows up and you're like, hey, you got a new church and state there, boom, and you get to watch it. So share that with your friends. We appreciate it. Hey, speaking of history though.
Yeah.
I love when I get to ask you this very question, Lisa.
Yes, sir.
How could you know where you're going?
If you don't know where you've been.
That's why we do this day in history.
We made history.
Any day in history.
A day that will go down in history.
History of this day.
This day in history.
This day in history.
Today happens to be the 23rd day of February in the year of our Lord, 2016. It's day number 54. In 312 of these babies, it's a leap year. 'Twas on this day, in the year 303, Diocletian ordered the destruction of the Christian church in Nicomedia, and that's the one that started off the 8 years of Diocletianic persecution. I just love saying Diocletianic because I can say it without stumbling.
Well, good for you. I probably will. On this day in 1455, traditional date for the publication of the Gutenberg Bible, the first Western book printed with movable type.
In 1778, this was during the American Revolutionary War, Baron von Steuben arrived at Valley Forge, Pennsylvania to help train the Continental Army.
On this day in 1836, Mexican General Santa Anna began the siege of the Alamo.
Thank you, John Wayne. Oh, wait, he wasn't actually there. He was Davy Crockett in the movie. 1896, the Tootsie Roll was invented by Leo Hirschfeld. Thanks,
Yummy.
Leo.
Remember when Anna used to get Tootsie Rolls when she went potty?
Oh, well, then there you go. There you go. I hope you enjoy breakfast this morning, ladies and gentlemen.
We never made the correlation.
Wow.
Until after.
Okay.
All right. And now this day in 1945, U.S. Marines raised the American flag on Iwo Jima.
And it was on this day in 1997. Scottish scientists announced the successful cloning of Dolly the sheep.
And oh, no.
I don't think she made it very long either.
I don't think so. Well, she was cloned.
And there was a whole bunch of more history, but, you know, it is only a one-hour show. And so, now you know where you have been. All right, we're going to take a break, and we got to get back here and talk a whole bunch of history with Robert F. Garrison. I believe I almost I'm looking. Oh, I got to get Robert's name. Robert F. Garrison, I guess he's our staff historian. He's a teacher in Ridgefield, Connecticut, at St. Padre Pio School. We're going to get back here and talk about Charles I. here on Magnificat Radio, MagnificatMedia.com. It's your morning tradition where we are
living our faith.
Welcome back to your morning tradition. Mike and Lisa Austin here on Magnificat Radio at MagnificatMedia.com, where we are
living our faith.
And we're going to jump right into it. King Charles I of England. We're going to talk about this with our resident historian. Please welcome our first guest of the day, our guest today. He is a teacher. He is a historian. He is he's got his master's in religious studies, and he teaches at St. Padre Pio Academy in Ridgefield, overlooking the beautiful lake. What is the lake up there? There's a lake there at Ridgefield.
Oh, you're quite correct. Lake Marimasco something like that. It's a gorgeous lake.
That's what I've heard stories. I'd love to see it. Well, we'll come visit you, and you can have us. You can pay for dinner.
You're on,
Mr. Garrison. I just wanted to talk to you today because we were talking off the air before about King Charles the First, and someone I know very little of. And you have this whole background with King Charles, with the Anglican Church, the Roman Catholic Church, the intrigue that involves that. A lot of people don't really know much about King Charles the First.
We are plagued by the fact that we grow up with a combination of just plain ignorance from not knowing and some pretty bad history that we learn, and that was long before the 1960s, so you can't blame it all on the 60s and its evil outcomes. I want to use the word prejudice, but we, especially those of us who defend the traditions of the church, and when we deal with the Protestant revolt, it's very easy to fail to understand all of the complexities that were involved. I mean, there were just blatant heretics in the 1500s. There were just blatant evils. And unfortunately, human beings being what they are, there were divisions that developed that didn't have to be heretical, that didn't have to result in the results that came about afterwards. And the way the Anglican Church came about, developed, and has proceeded through the centuries is really something we can learn from our own Catholic perspective, because we're right now going through a lot of the things the Anglican Church has gone through historically. And it's not good from our point of view. It's very negative. But also, we do pray and hope for Christian unity, and we do understand that we're not meant to be many bodies. We're meant to be one body in Christ. There was a Russian theologian, I think the beginning of the 20th century, a mystical man, very, very, very profound man whose name had lots of vowels and consonants in the wrong place. I'm not even going to pretend to remember it. But he said that the worst thing in the world that had to be cured before the world could be set right is the divisions between the Catholic Church, the Roman Church, and the Orthodox churches had to be resolved. Because of that division, he said, Christendom is not breathing with two lungs. And he says, the world will never be set right until that split is healed. And as much as the actions and words of Pope Francis may pose a bit of a challenge to traditionalists on occasion, his meeting with the Patriarch of Moscow is not a negative thing, I'll put it that way. It could lead, and hopefully will lead, to something that really is what ecumenism is supposed to be about. The healing of the rift between the historic churches that are really churches.
As long as we don't give anything up.
That's the absolute truth. What I'm saying is that it's amazing how much of the truth has remained in those separated churches, which, I don't know, history, completely non-religious issues have caused to be pushed to the background and just caused the split to keep going. And it's certainly not all our fault. I like saying that the schism between the East and the West has actually been healed, officially at least, I think like three times since it happened in 1054 officially. And every time there's been like a meeting, usually like the Patriarch of Constantinople and the Pope would get together, or representatives would get together. The last one was at, I think, the Council of Florence, or the Council of Constance in the 1400s. Mm-hmm. Both the Patriarch of Constantinople and the Eastern Emperor came to the West, had discussions, and essentially healed the schism. I mean, officially speaking, they said, yes, here's what we agree. And the Pope said, well, here's what we agree. They said, we all agree. Why are we separate? And they signed the papers, and it's like the schism is now healed. And the Pope went back to the Curia and said, the schism is now healed. And everybody said, oh, isn't that great? And the Patriarch and the Emperor went back to Constantinople because it hadn't fallen to the Turks yet. And they were rejected by their own people. So it's, you know, there's, you know, in individuals, we call it personal animosities that rise above ideals and, you know, notions, and just the personal things sometimes get in the way. Well, that caused it there.
That's the way everything happens, isn't it? We let ourselves get in the way of stuff.
Our human reality, it never works out as we sometimes like to plan it.
Yeah.
But anyway, in a similar way, not in exactly the same way, there are some things that you can see are reflected in both the story of the Anglican Church in general, but also specifically the life of Charles I. Because in his person, we see a rejection of some of the worst aspects of the Reformation, of the Protestant revolt, an acceptance of the what he himself would he never called himself a Protestant that I have ever read. Mm. He spoke of himself as a Catholic. The people who are devoted to him speak of, you know, the English church within the worldwide Catholic tradition.
He spoke of himself as a Catholic, and Parliament really didn't like that a whole lot.
Therein is the problem. Let me start with this. A few years ago, this memorial was run in the Times of London on the anniversary of his death, and the Anglican prelate printed this in a paper, and I picked it up. In memory of Charles I, King of England, beheaded on this day in 1649, the enemies of all he stood for are still with us. And when you study his life, the reason I find him both fascinating and important and meaningful, I guess you could say there's three reasons. There's the political and the historical. There's the religious. And then there's just the plain moral. And when the things you learn about a person or an historical event can be shown to be blatantly false, but they keep being repeated, then you have to ask yourself, why are they being repeated if they can be shown to be false? The political is very simple. And we all learned the basic story, and it's repeated ad nauseum. The whole conflict between Charles and Parliament, it was an example of an emerging democracy and an evil, tyrannical king, and we should all be glad that, Parliament and the parliamentary forces who represented freedom and democracy triumphed, and this nasty, tyrannical king had to go. Point is this. Charles I was king. He ruled from 1625 to 1649. He was born in 1600. He was not 48 years old, barely, when he died. So this is not an old, cantankerous fellow. He was the second son of James II and Anne of Denmark. He was not intended to be king from birth. He had an older brother who was tall and handsome and vigorous and, you know, kind of Greek god figure and loved by everybody. He was a short, slight, sickly child. He had a speech impediment, much like George VI. In the movie The King's Speech, he had a stutter. Mm-hmm. He spent his whole life overcoming. He was sort of shy. He was thoughtful, and in his teenage years, his older brother Henry died, and suddenly he found himself heir to the throne. He was really not well, I'm not going to say he wasn't well liked, but his father neglected him greatly. James I had his own issues going on. His mother cared for him, but she died. He was still a child or a teenager. So he grew up tended to by one of the ladies of the court who treated him very well, treated him like a son. So he did have a loving atmosphere in which he grew up, and he grew up a very devout, a very religious person. He takes the throne. Society is changing. Now, you have to grant that. The world was changing, and all the historians will say that. And at one point, when the Puritans, because the Puritan religion, the Puritan streak within the Protestant world, this is an Anglican prelate saying this, Puritanism is one of the most awful things that has ever been produced in the history of Christianity. Its vision of salvation is awful. Its vision of life in this world is awful. It was bad. But unfortunately, because of the tenor of the times, Puritanism, which was the English version of Calvinism from the continent, took hold. And like so many other instances in the Reformation or the Protestant Revolt, it had its power because unscrupulous political types on every level used it as their moral justification to get their political way. And anything that even resembled the Catholic was evil. I mean, just evil and had to be destroyed. And one thing that Catholics, especially American Catholics, have to break out of their own Puritan. Let's face it, our culture was Puritan. So the English culture that came to the New World, in great part, was Puritan.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And a lot of their prejudices and a lot of their presuppositions we have in, it's like historical DNA. We almost inherit it and we find it very hard to break with it. But this automatic rejection of the institution of monarchy is one of them. And the reason the Puritans hated the institution of monarchy as such, to put it very simply, it just looked too Catholic. Mm-hmm. So this was the political thing. Charles was now stuck with this. Parliament had one essential purpose in those days. Parliament, after all, had been created by the kings. It wasn't a popular movement to advise and aid the king in ruling and helping him with things. And, of course, money just always seems to be the problem. Now, understand money. The king's job as the executive was to uphold the laws. The king had traditional revenues. Here's the problem. In a traditional society, things kind of stay the same. So the revenues the king was taking in his traditional revenues with which he was expected to carry out his duties, mm-hmm. some of them had been set in, like, the 10th century. So in the 1600s, he was still collecting, let's say, the same.
Right. It'd be like today if we're trying to run the country with the same income tax or whatever as we had in the 1850s or whatever.
Exactly. Now, he tried to adjust these, and there was always complaints, but it didn't hit ahead until he tried to his basic problems came in with religion. Put all the politics aside, religion is always, you've got to come back to that. His idea of the English church and also of the church in Scotland, he saw the English church as the English church, as I have said, within the Catholic tradition. He did not like, and one might say he detested, the memory of Henry VIII. Hmm. He thought that Henry had pillaged the church, and all of England's problems, he believed, was the wrath of heaven because Henry had basically raped the church. So he went about trying to restore some of that. He rebuilt older churches. He rebuilt and refurbished cathedrals. They were afraid he was going to rebuild the monasteries. See, they saw this as a two-phase thing. The first phase was Henry VIII, who had pillaged the church by confiscating all the monastic properties. The Puritans of the 1600s, their plan was, now we have to pillage all the remaining churches and cathedrals until all of England is one happy Puritan, you know, meeting hall. And Charles was not going to allow that. And this is the thing that would bring him, that caused the conflict to really get hot. How many American Catholics or any Catholics know these things? Understanding that, and I by no means mean to say that, you know, there's no real difference between the Anglican and the Catholic churches. I'm not saying that. I'm a Roman boy, all right?
Yeah.
Heart and soul. But the point is that the links that bind us are not quite as severed as we sometimes think. The Reformation happened, started in the 1519 with Luther, went on. The notion of settled, totally separate churches, it took a long time to settle in, even in Rome. It was a long time before Protestants were looked at as a separate thing and not just like, you know, fallen away sons of the church who need to be called back.
Right, because you don't just automatically stop doing Catholic-type things. You may stop calling yourself Catholic, but it's in your blood, it's in your blood.
Yeah, and remember, the church's view towards any kind of heretic, and this goes back to any kind of heretic, what is the church's ultimate goal? It's reconciliation. It's to bring them back, mm-hmm. to have them repent of whatever needs repenting, and to be, you know, part of the family again. And this has never been expunged from the Catholic way of looking at things, even if in popular culture, you know, it gets very easy to see things as separate. And certainly Catholics have many reasons to see them as separate, given how things developed in different countries.
Right.
But This is the religious thing. He saw the English church, again, and as far as I know, never referred to himself as a Protestant. And the Anglo-Catholics I'm talking about, that's how they call themselves. They call themselves Anglo-Catholics. You call them a Protestant, them is fighting words. There's a church in England, I remember seeing this on TV, St. Mary's Church somewhere. They have this bronze plaque on at the entrance of the church. This is a Catholic church. This is not a Protestant church. We consider ourselves pretty much, you know, the English part of the worldwide Catholic Church. So these are people who they definitely do not see themselves as disciples of Luther in any way, shape, or form.
Right.
So it's that. So he basically felt he had to defend that. One of his quotes, and again, it'll get us into sort of the moral and the political and the historical. And these are words he wrote as he was awaiting his death. With them, my greatest fault must be that I would not destroy myself with the church and the state by my word, or not suffer them to do it unresisted by the sword, whose covetous ambitions no concessions of mine could ever yet either satisfy or abate. Okay, let's translate to 17th century English.
Yeah, wow. Uh-huh.
He basically, yeah, I know, 17th century English doesn't... He's basically saying, my greatest fault is that I would not destroy myself, the crown, and the church, and the state, myself, and allow them to completely overturn the traditions of this country, as well as the traditions of the church. I wouldn't do it, and I wasn't going to stand by the way they did it by force. I actually opposed them.
At some point, you've got to tell me if I'm correct in thinking this. There was nothing that Charles was going to do that would keep him from having the fate that he had, from losing his head.
No, nothing whatsoever. Because this is the tenor of the Puritans at the time. Well, we suffer again from this prejudice, and it's almost, you know, the phrase cut and paste. And it's the same, and it really is the same for all the differences when you study all the great overthrows and revolutions. It doesn't matter whether it's Charles I, Louis the XVI, Nicholas the II, Charles I, Karl I of Austria, the blessed Karl I. It's almost like a cut and paste thing, and that should be the first radar that goes up. Whenever they're written up, they were good men but bad rulers. Or if they were particularly conscious of taking advice and listening to all sides before doing anything, they're weak rulers. Mm. And yet when you cut to the chase, the one thing that incensed their enemies and resulted in their destruction were matters of faith. The specific religious thing, Charles saw himself as defending the Catholic traditions of the English Church. He accepted the real presence in the Eucharist, the veneration of saints, the veneration of relics, all of the pre-Reformation Catholic teachings and councils and saints, had no problem with any of them. He was in an ongoing correspondence. This was one of his acts of tyranny, by the way, that you never see in the movies because it might actually get people to question. He was in an ongoing correspondence with the Pope on how do we heal the rift? How do we get back together? He was in negotiations with the Pope to find out how do we heal this schism. And from the point of view of Rome, they offered a cardinal's hat to his Archbishop of Canterbury, William Laud, who would also be killed by the Puritans. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, again, was there this fissure that, you know, was it the difference between Catholicism and Islam? No, not, but no way. Was it the difference between Catholicism and Calvinism? No. These were people who were still there in many ways. They hadn't lost it all. I think Hilaire Belloc said England remained at least a third Catholic up to the later parts of the reign of Charles II.
Okay, hang on just a second, Robert. Mr. Garrison on the phone with us talking about Charles the First. And we've touched a little on political, a little on religious. We're going historical here. We're going moral, all of the categories. And we're going to finish up here on the way. Stephen Cox is coming up with news in just a second. We're up against the clock on a break. Mike and Lisa Austin, Magnificat Radio at MagnificatMedia.com, where we are
living our faith.